Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with author and media critic Robert McChesney and discuss the real winners in the election so far, and that is the media monopolies, who will rake in a record $5 billion from TV advertising in 2012, up from $2.8 billion in 2008. Robert McChesney has an article in The Nation, After Citizens United, The Attack of the Super PACs. Then we'll examine the serious First Amendment questions that Mitt Romney's official position in the hierarchy of the Mormon religion raise with Francis Boyle, a professor of international law at the University of Illinois College of Law, who previously taught at Harvard's Law School, where he was a classmate of Mitt Romney's. We will discuss the functional equivalent to the Mormon Pope and his College of Cardinals sitting in their Salt Lake Vatican City, giving orders to an archbishop, President Mitt Romney. Then finally, historian Michael Kazin joins us. He has an article at The New Republic, The End of the Christian Right. As Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum make last-minute appeals to Christian conservative voters in South Carolina, we will discuss the apparent inability of the power brokers on the religious right to unite behind a candidate who could beat Mitt Romney. And joining us now is Robert McChesney, who is the Gutskill Endowed Professor in the Department of Communication at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. He has written several books on media and politics and hosts the weekly radio talk show Media Matters, along with John Nichols. He co-founded the media reform organization Free Press. And the book Robert McChesney and John McNichols co-authored, The Death and Life of American Journalism, The Media Revolution That Will Begin the World Again, is now out in paperback and in a revised edition. And his latest book is Will the Last Reporter Turn Out the Lights? The Collapse of Journalism and What Can Be Done to Fix It. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert McChesney.
My pleasure, Ian.
And you have a piece in The Nation, After Citizens United, The Attack of the Super PACs. And clearly, the super PACs are playing a very pivotal role in this latest election. And I suppose there's a small irony is that the Republican candidates are the ones that are both profiting from it and suffering from it. But at the end of the day, as you point out, the real winners in this are the media.
Absolutely. Well, the point we wanted to make in our piece is that there's a lot of attention that's given to the huge amount of money that's coming into campaigns, and we write about that. And that this money comes overwhelmingly from the top 100, the 1% of the population. Extremely rich people provide the vast majority of this money. So there's no real incentive for average people to give money to campaigns anymore. And all the corruption that attends this. The part of the picture we wanted to add, though, is that if we had a functional news media in society, the power of these ads and the power of this money would be much less. And in fact, what we've seen is that all this money, for the most part, ends up in the pockets of a handful of companies that own the major cable and television channels that get all these ads, and then these are the same channels that people rely upon for news. And the news coverage of campaigns is, in most cases, non-existent in our broadcast and cable news media. And when it does exist, which is largely the presidential race, it's so empty as to be virtually worthless.
Well, specifically, according to your article in The Nation, After Citizens United, The Attack of the Super PACs, Robert McChesney, so far, Needham & Company, the industry's analysts, say that televisions will reap as much as $5 billion, up from $2.8 billion in 2008. That's an extraordinary disincentive, if you will, to fix our broken system, isn't it?
Yeah, the point we make is that the commercial broadcasting industry, which is represented in Washington ably by the National Association of Broadcasters, has no incentive to fix the system. This is, political advertising, post-Citizens United, this is a windfall of profits for local TV stations, which, although I use the word local because they're based locally, are almost overwhelmingly owned by a handful of huge companies that own, scores of these stations. And they're making gonzo profits. The average local television station in the United States 20 or 25 years ago might have made 1% of its total revenues from TV advertising, political advertising. By 10 years ago, it was up in the 5% to 8% range, maybe 10% at the outside. For most local TV stations, depending on the state they're in, they're going to be up in the 15 to 20, 25% range of all revenues in 2012 will come from political advertising. And there are some stations that are projecting 35, 40% of their revenues from political advertising. Political advertising is to local television broadcasting what Christmas is to retail.
And is it such that I assume, Robert McChesney, that the demand is so great because Romney has unlimited deep pockets, and the super PACs that he has, of course, has equally deep pockets, and the others are sort of desperate to get their message out. Has it reached a point, or did it reach a point in Iowa and New Hampshire where there was more money chasing airtime?
Yes, we've been at that point actually even before 2011 and 2012. There used to be a prohibition, or an informal prohibition, on local stations not to run two political ads next to each other to sort of give them some space between commercial ads. And then there was a prohibition on running competing ads next to each other so there'd be some space between two opponents. But those sort of prohibitions all have been blown out the window because all the time is being sold to politicians, or so much of it. And it's created sort of a logjam in the sense that, like, when Rick Santorum had a successful outcome in Iowa, then he rushes to New Hampshire and he's getting money donated to him. He went to buy time on the New Hampshire stations and the Boston stations that serve southern New Hampshire, and there was hardly any time available. I mean, it simply was bought up. He's not able to get into the game.
And presumably somebody that's got a well-oiled machine like Romney had already bought it up, right?
Yeah, probably. That's the likely choice.
So what's the picture down in South Carolina then? Since this seems to be, there's the element of desperation here, a last-ditch effort to stop the Romney juggernaut, if you will. Is that, have the stations been maxed out? I mean, I imagine in the free market, as it's called, that because of supply and demand, if everybody's clamoring to throw money at you, can you jack up your prices?
Well, one time, and I don't think Citizens United affected this, Congress actually put limits on what political ads could be charged, they could charge for them back in the 1990s. So there was, they weren't allowed to be just continually jacked up. Professed concern was politicians didn't want race to price out candidates with less money. The real concern was they just didn't have to pay more than they have to. And I don't think that's really an unfair regulation in any way you slice it. These companies, these broadcasters are making a fortune selling political ads, and they're theoretically using the public airwaves, so which they get at no charge in exchange for serving the public interest. And the primary way they could serve the public interest would be by airing extensive candidate debates, by covering all the campaigns, by drawing citizens of the community into the elections and as participants. They do none of that. Virtually none of that. They just dropped it like a hot potato. All they do is cash checks to run asinine ads. There is a special corner of hell for the commercial broadcasting industry when the final reckoning comes.
One of the things, though, that your article out now in at The Nation, Robert McChesney, after Citizens United, the attack of the super PACs, points out, and it is truly disturbing, is the role of Sheldon Adelson in coming to the rescue of Newt Gingrich in South Carolina. He put up a $5 million donation, which of course is small change for somebody that Forbes listed as the eighth wealthiest American with a $21 billion fortune. He's a big player, by the way, in the Israeli media with a newspaper and television akin to Fox News. And his closeness to Gingrich comes, I think, in part because they share an anti-Palestinian point of view. Gingrich recently referred to the Palestinians as a invented people, which I'm sure was music to Sheldon Adelson's ear. But the point here is, that obviously with the Buckley v. Vallejo decision that preceded Citizens United, where money equals speech was decided, and then Citizens United decided that unlimited money was okay, this raises the specter, surely, that theoretically, I mean, you could write a movie, couldn't you, Bob, that a billionaire bought an American election?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, we've already seen this year that because super PAC money is unlimited, and because the rules are written in such a way, and this isn't mandated by Citizens United, but it's the way the rules are written, that you can mask who's giving this money. So Sheldon Adelson came out, but it didn't have to. If they wanted to keep it secret, they could have found ways to keep it unknown. That, we have a very small number of people putting up most of this money, and we'll never know the identity, or probably never know the identity of most of them, like all of Karl Rove's main contributors. And it definitely means that, you know, you can go in and take someone out. This advertising, especially in the absence of journalism, and in a large state where it's impossible to do retail politics, this advertising can be very effective, especially negative ads, which is what super PACs specialize in, tearing down a candidate. They can get someone very unenthusiastic about a candidate. And one of the consequences of negative advertising, which is what super PACs largely do, is that it doesn't, in turning people off to the candidate they don't want you to vote for, it doesn't necessarily mean that you vote for the candidate they favor. It just might mean you don't vote. So this whole process has a tremendous demoralizing and depoliticizing effect. Because rationally, lots of people are going to say, this is a joke. All these candidates are horrible. I see these ads. They're all being paid for by anonymous billionaires. There's no one talking about anything I care about. It's all manipulation. I'm tuning out. And I think in the long run, the people who are paying for these ads don't mind that at all. The fewer people that vote, the better.
Well, just to follow on there, Robert McChesney, the notion that a billionaire could buy a U.S. election, Adelson, as I say, that was small change for him, the $5 million that he threw Gingrich's way to try and save him in South Carolina. The system is such, though, isn't it, that you could actually, a billionaire through a super PAC could put up unlimited money to blanket the nation and presumably also pay for everything else that's involved in a campaign. What role does the Federal Election Commission have in regulating the potential for a billionaire buying an American election?
Well, the key distinction here is why super PACs exist is technically and legally, they super PACs cannot work directly with the campaign. That's the one restriction. And so all the Shelton Adelson money doesn't go to Gingrich, and Gingrich technically can't control it. It goes to a super PAC, which theoretically and legally is independent of his campaign and run by people not connected to his campaign. But as everyone knows, that's a complete joke. All of these super PACs are run by former campaign managers. I mean, they've worked very closely with the campaigns. You know, Colbert and Stewart have been having a whole lot of fun with this on their show for the last week, ridiculing and lampooning this idiocy that everyone knows is nonsense. So a billionaire couldn't give the money directly to a candidate, but they can give the billion all the money they want directly to the super PAC as much as they want. And probably if they play their cards, I keep their identity largely unknown, if not entirely unknown. And you're right. There's nothing stopping someone from going out and saying, I'm going to take my money with a few of my crony friends, and we're just going to destroy all the opposition to the guy, the person we like, to make it so this person is just despised all over the country. And, you know, and that they can be very effective that way. Negative ads do work, especially in the complete absence of journalism, which is the state of America.
So given that the network monopolies make all the money or most of the money, and this year, is the $5 billion estimate for what's going to happen for the whole year, or is that up to now?
No, that's $5 billion is what's expected for what's called the election cycle, which started in 2011 but will finish in November of this year.
Right.
And I might add that our research, John Nichols and I have been doing a lot of research on this because this is actually part of a book that will come out right after the election. We think that $5 billion figure is a very conservative guess when you put everything together. To give some sense, we're going to have a recall election in Wisconsin for Governor Walker this spring at some point. And Governor Walker's already out there with the Koch brothers and the CEO of AIG, you know, raising money from billionaires. And we're looking at probably $100 million just on a governor's recall election. I mean, these figures are simply, these are amazing numbers. This is like trying to talk about the distance between Earth and the distant galaxy. We're in a whole different zone now that we can be throwing out $100 million for a governor's race. You know, that was sort of the entire campaign would have cost that, you know, 50 years ago for all races.
So the networks, though, and they mostly own these stations in Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina that money's been pouring at, they're going to reap in at least $5 billion this year, up from $2.8 billion in 2008. But there's also, I think, given what's happening now with Gingrich in his last-ditch effort to stop Romney, ABC is running tonight a very damaging interview with Gingrich and his former wife, Marianne, who apparently says that he proposed an open marriage, which certainly will not go down well with the Christian conservative voters in South Carolina. And this is ahead, of course, of the critical debate tonight on CNN. What's your sense of the role that not only are the media monopolies the beneficiaries of our broken political system, and they've gotten a huge infusion clearly with the with Citizens United and this phenomenon of the super PACs, they also seem to be playing a fairly overt role in picking and choosing winners.
Well, certainly that seems to be the way. Part of the problem is that in Fox News, we have a station that explicitly sees its job as sort of shepherding the conservative voice and finding the correct Republican nominee. And it assumes that role. And that, so all the candidates have to run in what's called the Fox primary to be successful to some extent.
Well, a lot of them are actually Fox employees, aren't they? Gingrich was, wasn't he?
Fox has employed numerous of them in one capacity or another as advisors, consultants, on-air personalities. Yeah, they have close relations with all of them. I know, but I want to get back to the point, which is that the actual amount of journalism being done is preposterously low. I mean, what passes for journalism now on broadcast news is occasionally what remains of print journalism will sprinkle a story over, like the story I think that's coming over on Mitt Romney's bank, you know, taxes and stuff in the Cayman Islands. It's just sort of an interesting story. Now ABC or USAID or some network's got an interview with the second wife about Newt Gingrich's sort of ideas of what a marriage ought to look like, at least before he married his current wife.
And while he was having an affair with his current wife, that was the point. You know, and by the way, this is at a time when he was impeaching Clinton.
You know, and I understand. I'm not here to carry water for Newt Gingrich or any other politician. But what I would say is that if we had credible broadcast journalism in this country, all the journalists, if there were any left, would be out combing the countryside to see who's giving this money, why are they giving it, what are they getting for it, how does this affect our governance? And they would also be getting to the bottom of this, exposing this, and trying to raise issues that are not being talked about at all, as far as I can tell, in the Republican primary. They're of interest to the American voters, not just sort of the goon squad people who attend their primaries.
Well, do we know, or does anybody have a clue of who is behind Romney's super PAC?
Well, yeah. From what we do know so far, it's a very small number of Bain Capital types and hedge fund types and extremely rich types, who the same people who gave these campaigns. Now, instead of just writing, you know, $5,000 checks for the primary in general for his campaign or $2,500 checks, they can cut $1 million checks or $2 million checks to the super fund. It's exactly the same people.
Again, I'm speaking with Robert McChesney, who is the Gutskill Endowed Professor in the Department of Communication at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. He's the author of Will the Last Reporter Turn Out the Lights, The Collapse of Journalism, and What Can Be Done to Fix It? And he has an article at The Nation, After Citizens United, The Attack of the Super PACs. How does this translate then, because we've talked almost exclusively about the presidential race. And by the way, is the $5 billion figure, is that for all political advertising or just in the presidential race?
All political advertising.
Okay, so let's turn a little then to how this is going to affect the House and Senate. Because I understand that there's quite a number of open Democratic seats in the Senate. The Republicans at least theoretically have a very, very good chance of taking over the Senate. I presume that super PACs will be formed in that regard, will they not?
They will, and there's also things like Crossroads, Karl Rove's super PAC, which, you know, doesn't just support one candidate, but which collects enormous amounts of money from billionaires and then selects races where it's going to operate and devote the money. So, it does, you know, that's a huge player in this, too. What happens with the congressional races and gubernatorial races and other races below the presidency is that the research shows that advertising is much more important because there's very little countervailing information people get because, you know, most of these other races are barely covered, if at all, in the news media, and the coverage they tend to get is so inane as to make the sort of junk that goes on in presidential races look profound by comparison. So money, as a matter of fact, almost always works more effectively in the Senate, House, and gubernatorial races than it does in the presidential race. So there is countervailing material, more of it. And we saw the first evidence of this in 2010, Ian, when Karl Rove and the Republican super PACs targeted 53 House seats they called swing seats in 2010, and they put a ton of money in their super PACs in those 53 races. And these were considered swing races, up for grabs, and they spent more in all 53 by at least $1 million. It's on average $1 million more than the Democrats spent in those 53 districts in each of them. And the Republicans won 51 of them. And that sent a really strong message. If you spend enough money, you can win.
Well, just in closing, Robert McChesney, at one of the debates in South Carolina, actually the last debate in South Carolina, most of these Republican candidates, particularly Romney, decried the super PACs. You know, it sort of reminded me of that old line in Casablanca. There's gambling going on in this establishment. I mean, it's a bit like the piano player in the whorehouse suddenly deciding that, finding out that that there's some sexual activity going on. You know, it rang very hollow to me. Their indignation. But what do you think will, in fact, be the fallout from this obscenity that has resulted from Citizens United, which is, I think, pretty clear to everybody? They people were not happy about money in politics before this happened, and I think it's turned into such a disgraceful display of oligarchical power that it's got to at least create some kind of backlash.
Well, on the Republican side, their solution to the problem of super PACs is simply to get rid of the restriction that says that super PACs cannot work with campaigns. And basically that means Sheldon Adelson could give his money directly to the Newt campaign without restriction. So they just want to get rid of that minimal remaining restriction. It seems to be their main concern. And then, in fairness, by doing that, they also then want to have it be transparent so you'd know who's giving the money. But they wouldn't do anything that would cut the spigot of money off. They could all go to the campaign and transparent. That's their reform. I think that is absurd, too. I mean, I think we've seen that that's not good enough. Just because we know Sheldon Adelson puts up the money or Mitt Romney's cronies put up the money, it doesn't stop the effect of being, you know, marinated in these asinine, destructive, negative ads. So I think that the real concern is we've got to get the money out of campaigns. We've got to have publicly financed campaigns. We have to really rethink our whole election process because it's bordering, if it isn't past the border, of absurd. And the place that's going to start, it's going to start this weekend, a series of demonstrations around the country protesting the two-year anniversary of Citizens United. It's going to start with movements like the Occupy movement. It's not going to start with the politicians. It's going to start with protests out in the streets, people making it clear, and then it's going to have to percolate up to the politicians. There are some politicians who are very sympathetic and who will want to do the right thing, but for every one of them, there are many more who got in through this system, who know how to work this system. That's why they successfully win elections, and they're scared to death to mess with the system.
And the Disclose Act that followed Citizens United, the Republicans basically buried it in the Senate, and it was never voted on. Will that ever come back?
It might, and we'll see. We'll see how serious the Republicans are about having disclosure in the next session of Congress. I wouldn't hold my breath or bet on it personally, but I'm always willing to be surprised. Disclosure and knowing who's giving the money is a nice place to start. And as long as someone can give billions of dollars, it's just no way to run an election. It's simply not a tenable solution.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Robert McChesney.
My pleasure, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Robert McChesney, who is the Gutskill Endowed Professor in the Department of Communication at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. He's written several books on media and politics and hosts the weekly talk show Media Matters, and along with John Nichols, co-founded the media reform organization Free Press. Robert McChesney and John Nichols co-authored The Death and Life of American Journalism, The Media Revolution That Will Begin the World Again, which is out now in paperback. And his latest book is Will the Last Reporter Turn Out the Lights? The Collapse of Journalism and What Can Be Done to Fix It. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the role of Mormonism in this coming election.
All that dying in dust, blowing up your hopes. Flamboyant obstacles, oh, deals made to cope, ideas in decline, rise of the lost, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, here we stand. Slave to networks, master plans. Swags the brand, open a can. Chains off still, yeah, I never ran.